Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, everyone. Mickey D here from Scorpions, ex-Motorhead, Dokken, King Diamond. You are listening to Talkin' Metal. Stay tuned, and you're going to hear some real heavy stuff.
Hey, headbangers, this is Rudy Sarzo, and you're listening to Talkin' Metal.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel, and before we get into the episode, you know what we're going to do. We're going to thank the people who make this episode happen. They are the patrons on my Patreon page, and man, I wish you guys out there who are not on this team would join the team, because we are going for 100 people. When we get there, we will produce a weekly video show, highly produced. It's not going to be me talking into my iPhone or some nonsense. It's going to be a real cool looking Talking Metal show. So let's get there. Join these guys for as little as $2 a month. You get a bonus podcast every week. If you do $5 a month, I will also mail you out a Talking Metal t-shirt. Just got a new supply of those in, so they are ready to rock. If you don't want to do Patreon, you can just buy a t-shirt outright for $15 if you live in the United States, $20 if you don't live in the United States. But of course, listen, you could just do 1 month. I mean, it would be kind of lame because I would lose money on it. But if you do $5 for 1 month on Patreon, I will send you a shirt. I hope you stay with me for longer than a month. But seriously, that you could do that. You would get the shirt. Again, we do like people to stay with us a little longer than that. It usually takes me 3 months to at least break even on those shirts when you join me on Patreon. Anyways, let's do this. Great guest today. And great people on Patreon supporting me with every step I make here on the Talking Metal podcast. These people are the upper tier folks. The strong arm of Patreon is Andrew Miller, Brad Dahl, Chris Riley, Dan Gerwan, Denny Striegel, Jerry from Salt Lake City, Matt Carroll, Mike Jones, Steve Hoker, and Steven Saylor, the upper tier, the strong men of Patreon. You know what? We have like 44 people on Patreon, not one female. Crazy. It'd be great to get a couple females joining us on the Patreon team. All right. And the rest of the Patreon folks: David Gray, Drake, Fred Rutz, Glenn Watson, Huckney Jacobson, James Bennett, Jason Seth, Gene Eugene DX, Jeremy Weltman, Joe Ryan, John Simpson, Mario Charance, Metal Dan, Michael Street, Sam Soupy, Sean Richmond, Steven Rodriguez, Tommy Anderson, Victor Guzman, Anthony Mackey, Ed Ferguson, Jerry from Long Island, Gregory Muse, Jean-Francois Blas, Johan Erdestrom, John Barron, John Bouvari, Kenny McCrimmon, Leo from Alaska, Patrick Sabin, Ron Keel, and Blue Walsh 21. Thank you, guys. You rock. Now, let's get into the episode. All right, guys, I'm keeping this episode tight because we have two great interviews. I truly enjoyed these interviews. And I will admit, I went into the Rudy Sarzo one not really having any questions written. I kind of just, it was a crazy day and I just had to wing that one. But I think it turned out great. Rudy is here to talk about Dio. Mickey D is here to talk about Motorhead. So two subjects I know we all love tremendously. So thanks to both those guys for joining me and for great conversation. I did want to mention just one more time that Amazon links are no longer working. So there you go. I don't know. It's a long story, but I've apparently violated the terms. I'm not sure what I did since I've done nothing differently than I've been doing for the past decade with my Amazon links, but something. They found a little snag in something I was doing and decided to cut me off of the $50 a month I used to get from them on average from you great supporters using those Amazon links. So I'm going to tell you today, don't use the Amazon links that are up on my site, because I'm going to have to pay my site person to come in and take those links down. And yeah, what a bunch of BS, man. So don't use the Amazon links. Support me on Patreon. That's the best way to do it. And let's talk about things. Man, we lost another metalhead. I feel like we're losing so many of our favorite rockers from the band Entombed. I don't know how you pronounce his name. Lars Goran Petrov has left us. And man, sad news. I was a fan of Entombed. I really, really dug their stuff. And a lot of rockers from, you know, Jamie Josta to Michael Ahmet from Arch Enemy all reaching out with memories of him and condolences and sad stuff for sure. I know he had been, I believe, battling cancer, right? So sad, sad day for Entombed fans. Tom Morello has launched a podcast that you can get through the SiriusXM app. Was checking that out. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. I was digging it. You know, first couple episodes up seemed all right. John Bush still wants to embark on a solo tour celebrating his era of Anthrax. That would be interesting. I'd dig that. I would definitely check that out, like in a smaller club. That would be fun. Queensryche's ex-singer Jeff Tate has released some new music for Sweet Oblivion. I loved the Sweet Oblivion record from 2019. I haven't had a chance to check out the new one yet, but I'm going to probably right after I finish recording this. So some metal news for you. Also, Cobra Kai star Tanner Buchanan is a progressive death metal guy, and he was in a band that played a bunch of Gojira covers. He is the kid who played Robbie, you know, Robbie Keane on the Netflix show Cobra Kai, which my wife and I and my one son Grant are enjoying that show. Fun stuff. So without further ado, my dogs have started fighting in the background, so I'm going to throw over to Mickey D here on the Talking Metal Podcast, my interview with Mickey D. Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and we are welcoming back to Talking Metal a true legend, drummer Mickey D. How are you?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm good. I'm in Germany. I'm in my hotel room. I've been here for a week in quarantine. Not that I'm sick, but we have to sit for a week here when we come in from different countries like Sweden and stuff. So I'm done with the quarantine tomorrow and ready to go back to the studio and start working.
Awesome. Cool. And I would suspect that is with Scorpions, right? That's you're going to be doing music.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Cool. So I spoke with Klaus maybe 3-4 months ago, and he was telling me that this new music was really kind of going back to that classic Scorpion sound of the late 70s, early 80s. Do you agree with that? And can you give us a little update on what's going on with the band?
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of different factors that are different for this record, because, I mean, to begin with, we record this one live all together.
Wow.
Which cool. I don't know when Scorpions did last time. And we did the last Motorhead record live, Bad Magic, and it did make a big difference. And I think it did now as well. And, you know, it's just a different vibe when you play all together, the song from top to bottom, and it was just, it gets rougher and better sounding and just a different vibe overall. So right there, it's different.
And, you know, I hear musicians talk about that, and I would think that there's an energy in the room that feeds into the music, as opposed to, you know, guys on the internet passing around files and cutting and pasting stuff together on their own. I would think when you're all together as a unit that you feel that energy in the music. Is that a true statement?
Absolutely. I mean, it's very, very different. And I mean, here we play as a band, and that makes a huge difference from if you're going to put drums down and bass and, you know, add on. So, but we worked really hard all of the fall of 2020 on this stuff. And I'm here back again to just tie up a couple of small things and maybe record a few more bonus tracks, if you will. And and the album is already starting to be mixed. So it's going to be very interesting to hear the finished product.
I cannot wait. I saw you guys last time was at Madison Square Garden in New York City. I mean, what a night that was.
Right.
So much fun. And we need you guys back. We need our concerts back. And I tell you, one of the first concerts I want to see is Scorpions. I mean, you got to get back to New York and New Jersey. We need you so bad.
That was a great show. I remember it. You know, it was so much fun. And for me too, I haven't really done a full-blown US tour yet with Scorpions. We've done a lot of shows, but it's been kind of a few here and there. We need to do a proper American tour. And to come back to New York, which I love to play, ever since the old King Diamond days, you know, it's something special. So it was great. It was magic that night for sure.
Yeah, that was a very special night. And headlining the Garden, it doesn't get any better than that. Anyways, we are primarily here to talk about Motorhead, a band that you were a part of for a long time. I think 12 studio albums, 13 if you include March or Die, which I know you had one song on that, Hellraiser.
Right.
But let's talk about what's coming out, because this is very cool for all the hardcore Motorhead fans like myself. We have a concert, Motorhead Louder Than Noise, live in Berlin, and this is going to be released April 23rd. It sounds like it's a CD along with a DVD. I guess you can get vinyl for it too. It's going to be on all the streaming platforms. So again, this is a 2012 concert that was recorded in Germany. Do you have specific memories? I know Motorhead played so many shows. Do you actually remember playing this show?
Yes, I do, because this show was a little special because of the fact that we headlined a very, very big arena for being Motorhead. We did so many shows in Germany. We could do 20, 22 shows. So
wow.
We usually played a little smaller type of venue, but here we sold out this massive arena, which was great. And I remember it was a special night that night for sure. And now looking back to the set list, when we were talking about using this show, I saw a great set list, because we play a lot of songs that we didn't really play much either before or after. So I think it's a great mix of songs, definitely.
Right. What are some of those songs that are maybe a little bit more rare to find in the Motorhead set that we would hear on the Louder Than Noise CD and DVD?
I don't have the set list in front of me now, but I just remember it was a lot of songs that I go, oh, shit, we played that one and we played this one. And and that I don't really remember what exactly we did play before I saw the set list, but it surprised me. And then we recorded a lot of songs usually. I mean, there are shows over the years, but this one was a little special. And we have more material from different countries, different cities. And we just decided this Berlin show was top notch, really. So, you know, it's going to be exciting to have it mixed and done. I mean, it is mixed and done, and it sounds great, you know.
Yeah, there is a music video out there for the song Over the Top from from this performance. Again, it is Louder Than Noise, live in Berlin by Motorhead. It's coming out in April. And the crowd, like you said, it's just the energy on the coming off the crowd just seems so intense. The song looks, it sounds great. It looks like it's a multi-camera shoot, and you guys really did a great job with the video production on it. Will the bonus DVD be the full concert? Is that what it is? Do you know that?
I'm sure it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But to let you know, I mean, we did not record this one for a purpose as of this, like to make a, I don't know why we actually recorded it. It was just a special show, and we have plenty of these, to tell you the truth. And
really? Wow.
But this one was sounding really good. We didn't, I know Cameron Webb had to mix it and fix it up a little bit, and it turned out great. So, and it was great energy. It was a great show to begin with. So,
absolutely. And again, we're talking with Mickey D of Scorpions and, of course, of Motorhead. And the release is Louder Than Noise, live in Berlin. It comes out April 23rd by Silver Lining Music here in the States. And it is going to be awesome. I am so excited to watch this and own this and stream this and everything else. And speaking of Motorhead, we spoke with Phil Campbell not too long ago here on Talking Metal. Do you have much contact with Phil these days?
Yeah, we talk frequently, and especially now when there's something coming out like this, we have to make a lot of decisions. Unfortunately, it's just me and Phil left to make these decisions, but we talk generally, you know, we frequently with each other, what's going on and so on. You know, I mean, we're still family, and we're going to stay family forever. So it's great to hear what he's up to.
And when you guys are talking about releasing something like this DVD, which I think Lemmy personally would be really proud of, or any of the Motorhead products, or just putting the Motorhead name on something, do you and Phil, I would imagine you take into consideration what Lemmy would have wanted, and is his kind of presence in a weird way a part of the decision-making process?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, after playing so long together, and I knew Lemmy for 34 years and played with him almost 25. So, of course, Lemmy's always in the back of our head when we make decisions or, you know, do anything with Motorhead. We have a big responsibility to carry on the Motorhead name and legend, you know. So, definitely. But, you know, you just said it pretty perfect there with the fact that we like to, there's a big demand out there for still Motorhead stuff, Motorhead new material, merchandise. I mean, it's amazing how this band, you know, it's 5 years ago Lemmy passed away, and the demand is even bigger now. People are hungry for Motorhead. So it feels great to be able to offer something like this, you know, like come out with something new material, especially live. So I think it just feels good to move the name ahead. And look, I haven't done anything else for the last couple of days than doing press about Motorhead, which is quite bizarre because we don't really exist anymore. But we are in another way, you know, we want to keep the legend and we want to continue giving our fans a gift, if you will, with these kind of products, you know?
Yeah. And you make new fans too, because you keep that name out there, you keep it in the press, out on the internet and on podcasts like this. And I think there are younger, believe it or not, there are younger kids who could be just discovering Motorhead for the first time. And that's an amazing thing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I get a lot of messages about from younger generations that, you know, a lot of people missed to go and see us live. And some of these DVDs and live shows that you can see has been out there for a while. So it's very exciting to get something like this put on the market, you know, and some people see this as, wow, you know, you guys are really just fishing for money here, but it's really not a lot of money in this. This is more of a gift and to continue the legend of Motorhead. And as I said, we do it press and we're being on the forefront again, which is great. So, you know, we give people an option to enjoy this or not enjoy it. It's up to them. Yeah.
Right. And is there unreleased studio material by Motorhead in the vaults anywhere that, that could surface, or has everything been put out at this point?
Yeah, good question. I'm sure that there is some stuff recorded. I can almost guarantee you that we have something out there that, that has not been released, but what exactly it is, I don't know. And there's probably a reason why we haven't released it. So, you know, it has to be good, or we probably just left it. I don't know. I have to hear it, but I could be surprised. I mean, most of the time when we made a record, we really, really wanted to get that album done and get back on the road again. So I don't think there's a lot, but it could be a few things.
Right on. And like I mentioned earlier, you played on 12 Motorhead studio albums, 13 if you count, you know, March or Die from 1982, right, where you played on really the most popular song on the record, Hellraiser. Out of those albums, are there certain ones, or maybe one certain one, that is your absolute favorite?
No, not really, because each record represents a certain time for us. And I can't really say that any record is better than the other. I mean, I just think that since Cameron Webb came in on the Inferno, we made a tremendous step forward, sound wise, and we found Cameron. He's a family member. I keep talking about family members, and that's what we were, one big fat family with a crew and people all around us that worked close to us. And Cameron is one of these guys, and he took us to a little different level. So yeah, maybe those last 5-6 records are very, very special. And then I go back and listen to the one that Howard Benson did, The Bastard, Sacrifice, Overnight Sensation, Snakebite Love, and these are great albums. Bastard is one of my favorites, maybe, you know. And so it's they all represent a certain era of Motorhead, and I like them all equally, pretty much, you know. I just know maybe a record like Snakebite and Hammered, we could have used a little bit more time. I remember we were pretty pressed on time for these two records. Not that they came out bad or anything, but we could have used, especially for Hammered, because it was pretty tough days in America. It was when the 9/11 shit was going on.
Right, right.
The mood in general was pretty rough. And we could have maybe worked a little bit more on certain songs for that record.
Right on. So many great records. You mentioned Overnight Sensation. It's amazing to me that that is having its 25th anniversary this year, 2021, yes, the 25th anniversary of Overnight Sensation by Motorhead. One of my favorites. Go ahead.
Yeah. And it's funny here, because that kind of created some headlines recently when, you know, I don't appreciate that really, with when the press takes a headline out of a full conversation, for instance. You know, I think I saw on Blabbermouth and on some of these rock sites that Mickey D reveals that me and Lemmy, or Motorhead, we were fighting a lot, especially for that record. And that is not true at all. What my point was that we had arguments and discussions in such a fantastic way because of the respect for each other, that we had healthy arguments and discussions over certain things that just united us even more than we were earlier, if you will, you know. And any band that played for 40 years, of course, going to have discussions and than arguments, but it was just on such perfect terms, nothing under the belt. And that just made us stronger all the time, because I remember on Overnight Sensation that Lemmy wanted to use a little bit more acoustic guitar on a couple of songs. And me and Phil were against that. And later on, Lemmy totally agreed with us that, yeah, you were right. You know, it's better not to use that. And if we had discussions about that, it could get hot, but it was just with such a respect and
passion. And I would think you guys had such passion for what you were doing that it would be, if there weren't intense discussions about the art and music you were creating, that would show that you just didn't have that passion. But I think that's a beautiful thing. And I think it also shows how you guys were all contributing together, because sometimes we hear about bands where one person is more prominent than the other, but here's, you know, three people, you know, all contributing their ideas and having this common goal of just putting out the best stuff that they can.
Exactly. And that was my point in this whole deal. And then you see headlines going, Mickey D reveals, we were fighting with Lemmy, and Lemmy was, we were arguing and Motorhead was fighting, and that's not the deal at all. If you read further down or listen to the whole thing,
right,
this is my point I was trying to get out, that this is what made us three such a unity, that we could discuss and argue, and it was just under such amazing unwritten rules that we made forward progress the whole time, and it was just healthy for us, you know. It was great.
Right on. Well, thank you for clarifying that. And Speaking of anniversaries, we'll shift gears here just a little bit, and I will let you go in a couple minutes. But I did want to mention the first time I ever saw you live, of course, was with King Diamond. And This year, Fatal Portrait turning 35. Actually, it just turned 35, because Fatal Portrait was released February 17th, 1986. King Diamond's first solo record. How do you look back on that record 35 years later?
Oh, wow. I only have positive things for that whole era we did. We were a bunch of young boys that, enjoyed it tremendously. And especially with the success in America that we had, we took, I would say, Merciful Fate to a different level. We came out of the underground type of music and created an amazing following in America, and especially in America, around the world, but US was definitely the biggest market for us. And Fatal Portrait was a great record, and King wrote fantastic lyrics, and we played great music, and we just developed from there. It's amazing that it's 35 years ago, you know?
Yeah. It's funny for me as a fan, that record had a rawness to it that I liked, that I felt that the production and maybe even musically things kind of shifted after that record, but it just seemed like the perfect bridge between those Merciful Fate records and what was to come later out of King Diamond. But great memories for me. I saw you at the Channel in Boston.
Oh,
on that
the
tour.
Channel. Yeah, that was a good show. We always did Channel. Yeah, I mean, Fatal Portrait is a little bit less tricky if you compare it to Abigail and Them in Conspiracy.
Right.
It's a little more even record, more straight ahead stuff, but it worked really well. And I thought, I think it's a great album, actually.
It is. And it's held the test of time. I recently went back and listened to it. So good.
Definitely.
Well, I will let you go, Mickey. I do appreciate your time. We read that you actually came down with COVID-19, I guess, a number of months back. You're feeling okay? Everything's all right with you?
Oh, yeah. That's 1 year exactly ago. It was
it that long ago? Wow.
Okay. March 20. And yes, I have to say, me and my wife, we were very sick, influenza sick, you know. But I've been even sicker. I think I had influenza one time before in my life. I was in Australia. That was with Motorhead early a little while ago, and I was really, really sick at that time as well. And this time, yes, we got knocked out for a couple of weeks, and after that, I recovered. The more I was playing ice hockey and being outside and being busy, the better I felt the next day, basically. So
good.
I just went hard out to exercise lungs, and my body was back in shape in a couple of weeks, what I felt. So yeah, definitely. And I'm full of antibodies. And now, because of the travel we do, we have to do COVID tests the whole time here. So, you know, I said to my doctor, you might as well let this the pin stick out of my nose and leave it there, because
right.
I'll be
You're
back
so used
here.
To the testing. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm back.
But no lingering effects or anything like that, you know, no fog brain or nothing, none of that stuff.
No, well, I guess, you know, we call it Corona brain, I guess, as a joke, but if you forget stuff. But no, I feel fine. And I'm ready to go back out there and play. I can't wait to get back on the boat, you know.
We want Scorpions back here in the States. I would love to have you guys at Madison Square Garden again. That was such a good memory for me. And listen, we wish you all the best of luck with everything you're up to. And please keep us posted on this new music by Scorpions. We cannot wait.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mickey D. And guys, remember, right. Motorhead, Louder Than Noise, live in Berlin, out in April. We'll have links up in today's show notes on talkingmetal.com. Thank you, Mickey. Mickey D of Scorpions and, of course, Motorhead fame. So great to talk with Mickey again. He was on the show a few years back, and great to speak with him again. So let's do this. Let's get on with our next interview. I'm going to keep this show tight. I gave you a bonus episode on Friday, so this one is lean and mean with some interviews and not much else, but they are good interviews. Right now, we're going to talk with Rudy Sarzo, and then I'll come back and wrap things up here on Talking Metal. Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and what an honor back on the show. Rudy Sarzo, I think the last time we met up, Rudy was in person in New York. I believe you were up here for the Guess Who, and we met up at some hotel downtown. So anyways, great to see you this time on Zoom, hopefully next time in person.
By the way, I like the poster behind you. I think I recognize that guy.
Yeah, that's a hero of mine, and I know a friend of yours, and yeah, great stuff.
And bandmate,
yes.
Randy Rhodes, yeah.
With your time in Ozzy Expand.
And Quiet Riot. We were together in Quiet Riot.
Yes, and Quiet Riot, the Japanese albums. You both played on those, right? Were you on both those records?
I was on the cover.
You were on the cover.
Yeah, because, well, you know. But yeah, I didn't play on the record. I was on the cover. The Kelly Garney, the bass player, he was gone. Way after I joined the band. As a matter of fact, I was the last guy to audition for the band.
Right on. And went on to have be a part of the classic lineup of Quiet Riot. And yeah, a lot of great memories of that band. And man, I've seen you so many times with Whitesnake. And I think Quiet Riot, you guys did a reunion of that classic lineup in 2002, I think is the last time I saw you in that band in BB King's in New York City. I don't know if you remember that, but
yeah, we were together from 97 in the reunion version until 2003.
Right on. And what a history. Let's talk about a certain part of your history today. We are talking about your time with Ronnie James Dio, the legendary vocalist and songwriter, and you were a part of the new Holy Diver live album, which was recorded at the London Astoria, and all the great Dio hits and Black Sabbath and Rainbow classics are a part of it. And this, when did this concert take place, Rudy? Do you know?
Yeah, very interesting. This whole concert, because how it started was that we were going to do a whole month in Russia. We started touring in Russia, and we had our own plane. We were flying from city to city. And then by the time we were done in Russia, and the band, of course, included all the musicians on the record, Holy Diver Live, But with the difference is that Doug Aldrich was not the guitar player during the Russian leg of the tour. Craig Goldie, our guitar player, had to go back to LA to take care of some personal issues. And then Doug came in. So Doug was with us for about 2 or 3 weeks before we did this live DVD at the Astoria. So Doug did an incredible job of coming in and like really picking it up where we left off. I mean, there was not a bad night in the transition of it. You know, he's such, you know, both Craig and Doug, they're such incredible, you know, world-class musicians, you know.
Absolutely. And it's funny because I saw you guys at the Beacon in New York in 2004. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that show. I think Anthrax opened up, and that was Craig Goldie was in at that time.
Yes. So
that was an incredible show.
Yeah, it was an unforgettable evening. I believe Eddie Trunk introduced Ronnie.
Sounds right. Yes.
Yeah. And that was the only American leg of the tour that I did while I was a member of Dio from 2004 until he passed away.
Right on. And can you talk about you coming into Ronnie's band, how that all came about? You remember jamming with him for the first time or conversations about you coming to join the band?
Yeah, it was actually very organic. I got the call from Wendy Dio to come in and to record on Master of the Moon. And I happened to be on the road with Yngwie Malmsteen at the time. And it was a short tour. It was the Attack Tour in 2004. Tour. Yeah. And so I was committed. There was no way I was going to Yngwie, listen, you know, I'm out of here. I've never done that. I never will, you know. So I told Wendy that how disappointed I was that I wasn't going to get to record on the record. But after my commitments were done, if they still wanted me to join the band after the record was done, that, you know, I would love to, you know, and they did. They called me back. And that's when I joined the band in 2004, and we did that tour mostly in America. And the last show of that tour that you're talking about, the 2004 U.S. tour, was Halloween at the Greek Theater. Very unforgettable show. You know, it's always about, to me, you know, the highlights is L.A., New York, you know. But then again, there's some incredible shows in between.
Right. And would that have been Ronnie's last concert as a solo artist? Because I know he went on then to Heaven and Hell, but I'm wondering if that was his last.
Yes, in the United States.
Okay.
Great observation. Yes, that was his very last Dio concert. And what a way to go. It was magnificent. Beautiful night in Los Angeles at the Greek Theater.
Absolutely. And so it wasn't until 2004 that you started playing with Ronnie, but obviously you've had such a long career and incredible history. I'm sure you had run-ins with him. How well did you know him before joining the band?
Well, we have done some festivals together. Like when I was in Whitesnake in 1990, we did some Monsters of Rock festivals across Europe together, Dio and Whitesnake. But you know, you really don't get to know somebody until you're in the tour bus and traveling together. That's when you really get to know the person, you know. And it was magnificent. Not only do we add that I had that touring in the United States, but also in Europe and Scandinavia, Russia, like I mentioned a few times with Ronnie, South America, Japan. Yeah, they were all unforgettable.
And of course, we are talking about the new live Holy Diver live, that is, and which Rudy is holding up there.
I'm holding up. I unsealed it in front of my wife. Like, she was so incredibly impressed about it. And I'm very touched that I've included a couple of pictures in the cover with Ronnie. You know,
right.
What, What a, you know, people ask me what's the highlights of my career. I got to tell you, top three being on stage with Ronnie James Dio, you know, to stand right next to him every single night and just be a fan and also be a bandmate at the same time. And just, I had the best seat of the house, you know, it was just incredible, you know, and to play, see, it's different when you're on stage with Ronnie, you're feeling his energy. You're listening to his storytelling. He wrote all the lyrics. So everything is very personal. All the stories that are being told in the songs are very personal. So all I had to do is just close my eyes and be transported into the worlds, the landscapes that he created, you know, with his lyrics and his music.
Yeah, what a great songwriter. And was there ever any talk of you doing songwriting with him? Did you guys ever jam and do any writing on the bus while you were touring?
Touring on the bus, you know, usually, especially when we were in Europe and Scandinavia, all of that, all of those territories, it's the band and the crew together, you know. Those buses, they're made for larger, you know, it would be like double-decker buses, and the whole top would be bunks where everybody, you know, lived there, basically. And it was basically you get long hauls because we're talking about country to country, you know, so it wasn't like touring in America where you have like maybe a three or four hour tour bus ride. And then you get to the hotel early in the morning and you got the whole afternoon to go ahead and write music. You know, these were pretty long hauls, and which socially it was great, you know. And I think Ronnie really likes, you know, used to like to go into his own home studio and work on the songs. It was fantastic, fantastic going over to his house because I lived like maybe 15 minutes away from him, and going there, and he would like bring me to the studio and says, check this out. And he would like, he learned how to work Pro Tools very well. So he would play every instrument except for the drums. Simon Wright, who lived with him, programmed the drums, you know, but everything else was Ronnie playing and of course singing. And he would play you back a song that you hoped would have wind up on a Dio record. Like he was working at the time, he was working on Magica 2 and 3.
Right. Yep.
But some of those songs wound up with Heaven and Hell.
Okay. Okay. I did not realize that.
Yeah. I'm glad they did because we have them. And we did one song, Electra. Right. Electra in the studio that was going to be part of 2 and 3. And that's all we got, you know, unfortunately. But it was incredible. That's one of the things that really resonated with me about Ronnie was the fact that he, you know, piracy, lessened record sales, illegal downloads. He didn't care about that. He just cared about creating music, which is that's the way it should be. You know, making new music, you know, creating songwriting, putting records out there, you know, because, you know, when we start writing music, we're just kids. We don't have a record deal. We're in our garage making this new music. We don't know if anybody else is going to listen to it, but we're creating it. And that's the most important thing about it.
Absolutely. Now, you spent some time with the classic lineup of Ozzy solo band touring with, again, Randy Rhoads and just a really golden era of Ozzy's career. We've heard in the press, now I've asked Wendy Dio this and she disagreed and said that it was more of a press thing, but I want to get your opinion, that there was a really big rivalry between Ronnie James Dio and Ozzy Osbourne. Some articles saying, oh, they didn't like each other. But according to Wendy, that wasn't exactly true. What's your tilt on that? Was there a mutual respect there, or was there kind of this rivalry between the two?
Yeah, if I did hear anything, it was never aimed towards Ronnie. It was aimed towards Black Sabbath.
Right.
Black Sabbath as Black Sabbath. even because Ronnie was there for two records originally, initially, and then he came back for another record, yeah, Dehumanizer. But in Correct. Between that, there were other singers, you know. But Black Sabbath as a band, you know, name remained the same, you know. As a matter of fact, I asked Ronnie about the song, oh, The King of Rock and Roll, right?
Yes.
I'm going like, I go, who did you write the song about? And he said, Ozzy.
Wow. Really? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild. I never heard that. So very yeah. interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. So it seems like possibly there was mutual respect between the two. I know there's one famous picture that circulates now and again where you see the two of them post Black Sabbath hanging out like backstage at a festival or something. So very cool that you've experienced time with both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Very different singers, but both of them incredible. You know, they are the significant vocalists of the two most successful Black Sabbath eras, the Ozzy era and the Dio era.
Right on, right on. And as far as other music goes at the moment, Rudy, what else is on your plate?
Well, I just finished my toast, so
my plate okay, is literally. Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm in a group called The Guess Who. We're just waiting for the things to settle a little bit so we can start doing shows again.
Yes.
And just having, I work on so many projects. I'm doing so many things musically. It seems like lockdown means that I get more phone calls to do things than I used to at home, you know, because everybody else is locked down, you know. And I have my own radio show, 6 Degrees of Sarzo on Manchester Rock Radio. I do that every week, Friday, Saturday, Sundays, and on the weekdays. And just having a great time, you know.
Awesome. Cool. And again, thank you for all the great music you've given us through the years. I mean, you're always there for us with great music. And what a treat that this classic Dio concert is being released, the Holy Diver Live, featuring you and Doug Aldridge and Simon Wright on drums, right?
Simon Wright, Scott Warren on keyboards, yeah. And the one and only Ronnie James Dio.
Yes. Yeah. And do you hear from Simon Wright much?
Yeah. We're still, you know, I mean, we're still best friends, of course, you know, we're brothers, Dio brothers, you know, we'll never, you know, that we'll never forget that. And yeah, he's just busy there. I guess they're waiting for things again to settle so they can go back out with the Dio Disciples.
Right on. Cool. Well, Rudy, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. And may you stay safe, and we can't wait to get you back here in New Jersey or New York playing for us once again.
Looking forward to it. Always a pleasure. God bless you.
All right, sir.
Rudy Sarzo, I believe his third time on the podcast. First time I interviewed him in a recording studio in New York when he was doing like rock and roll fantasy camp or something in New York City. Then I interviewed him in a hotel in downtown Manhattan when he was here with the Guess Who doing some press, and this time via Zoom here on Talking Metal. Great stuff. I'm a little sick of the Zoom interviews, but it is fun to see these guys on camera and talk with them and see them. But looking forward to getting back to in-person interviews. If you haven't heard my Paul Stanley interview, it is available. Well, depending on when you're listening to this show, it is available this week on the Talking with Mark Striegel podcast. They requested it go out over that feed instead of Talking Metal because Paul was not talking about hard rock or heavy metal. He was talking about his Soul Station album with me. But of course, we got some Kiss in there a little bit, you know, and spoke about Kiss songwriting and stuff like that. So there is some Kiss talk for sure in the interview, and it was a great chat. You can also see that on YouTube coming this Thursday, and the Patreon people will get a look at that before anyone else. So there you go. Please join me on Patreon. We desperately need the help, the support to keep this thing rolling. Seriously, we were growing each week with like one or two new people joining us on Patreon, and that halted for some reason. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure if we're tapped out. I can't help but believe there are more people out there who can afford $2 a month on Patreon and support what I do and get that bonus content. You get bonus videos, bonus podcasts, all sorts of stuff, depending on what tier you join. The $2 a month tier, you do get the bonus podcast I do each week with Victor Ruiz, which we call the Mark Striegel podcast, which people love. I mean, I have people tell me that's the best thing I do. So, and that's because I go off a little bit. It's like, I feel like it's a private party, it's a private room, and I can say whatever the hell I want. And I've gotten in trouble for that too. There you go. It's fun. I blow off some steam on the Patreon only podcast for sure. Let's do this. Let's wrap it. Let's say thank you to Mickey D and Rudy Sarzo. And thanks to everyone who listens on Patreon. Listen, if you can't afford $2 a month, you're that broke, which, some of us are. One thing you can do is share this stuff on social media. Tag the person you heard in the interview. Let Rudy Sarzo or Mickey D know, oh, what a great interview you did on Talking Metal. Tag me. I'll follow you back. I'll retweet it. That's something that I really appreciate you doing on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, okay? So please, especially on Twitter, I'm really trying to build that up, the Twitter thing. So thank you. And talk to you next time.